Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the show. As just previously mentioned, it's Lars, Matt. Noah is behind the glass. Hope everyone is doing well. Lars was noticing as we walked into the studio, we were talking with Christian. Is it the first thing anybody talks about right now? Well, what about that play? Well, what about that play? Should have been this defense. Should have thrown this. Should have. It's in every bit of everyone's conversation.
It's not just in the state. It's everywhere across the country.
It was a remarkable play. And it just...
I'd argue it's the play of the year so far.
In all of college football, probably so.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what lays in wait, though, is Georgia. At what time during this week do we start focusing on Georgia? Halfway through Wednesday? We're going to just cut it right in half?
You know, it was such a spectacular Iron Bowl. I think it merits another day of exploration and analysis and what the heck happened.
Have you thought about it and have a different view than you did yesterday?
No, I still am wondering why Auburn essentially just rushed two and had a spy. Why are you using a spy when you're 31 yards out? Because essentially you're making it 11-10, and you know they could have used that extra defender to double bond. And also, just what an incredible throw. And Christian and I were just talking about that, and Christian was like,
"It's NFL,
yes, yeah." And not only that, it's high level NFL. Of course,
so
I mentioned
words,
Joe Burrow. Market four minutes into the show.
Yeah. Joe Burrow will give you till 11 to bring up Nebraska. Okay. Oops, already did. But yeah, it's. I don't get tired of looking at it either. Do y'all?
No. And the thing is, the throw, and you and I were together yesterday afternoon, and they were playing highlights of it. And every time you see it, it's like you see something new and all the different angles. And again, that is a throw that and a play that maybe you hit maybe 10 out of 100.
So one out of 10.
Yeah.
I don't know if you hit it that often.
Probably not.
Even at the elite level of the NFL. How many times has Brady hit that pass?
You know, I mentioned this yesterday. I don't remember a signature throw by Tom Brady.
That's just because death by a thousand cuts. And that's the way Brady picked you apart.
Yeah.
But I don't remember one either. And in fact, do a deep dive here. Do you remember a better throw in the history of football?
Well, Joe Burrow had one the other day before he got hurt.
What about Tommy Frazier?
Tommy Frazier had a run against Florida in the national championship game where he literally broke, I think, 8 tackles. You remember that run?
Oh yeah, but he ran an option offense. He was not a passer.
Yeah.
I was just trying to work the Cornhuskers in for you, Lars.
I know,
and not even volleyball.
Vince Ferragamo, he may have had a good throw for Nebraska back in the mid-70s.
What an interesting character,
David Hum, the Hummer.
I remember him. Wasn't it Ferragamo that was rumored to have been having some type of a relationship with the owner of the Rams?
Yeah, Georgia Frontier.
Yeah.
And he led the Rams to the Super Bowl against Pittsburgh.
Yep, he did. But
I mean, for Alabama, of course, there's 2nd and 26. The stakes were higher, but that's a far easier throw.
Oh, yeah.
And I swear, you see Tua make that throw every single week for the Dolphins now, where he looks to the right, and the safeties move over. Then he goes back to his left and just, you know, hits that receiver in stride over and over again. But is that, if you take away 2nd and 26, is that the greatest single throw in Alabama football history?
Oh.
Did Joe Namath have a signature throw? Did Kenny Stabler?
Believe it or not, I was still relatively young to remember from that time. But on our black and white
Magnavox. Did Bryce Young have a signature throw? Bryce Young's signature throw was probably against Auburn, right? To Ja'Cory Brooks.
Yeah. But that was more catch than it was throw, wasn't it? That's a good question. By the way, I just thought of one. And I'll, during the next break, I'll try and get a time on it. How long was Milroe in the pocket for that?
Oh, I think one Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi, four Mississippi. I'd say five Mississippi.
I would say at least five.
Yeah.
It was incredible. It's the play, and it is the talk of the town. It's leading up to Georgia, though, Lars. And as we get a little closer to that, I'm hearing, A, McClellan aggravated that foot again, right? And Bowers, I think, is closer to playing than Jace is.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think Bowers maybe could have gone against Georgia Tech, but they wanted to save him. But I don't know. I've been thinking a lot about, can Alabama make it to the playoffs? I think, you know, if they beat Georgia, Alabama will, it'd be hard to argue that they're not one of the four best teams in the country. But you know, people are going to be talking numbers and, but just if you are a true college football observer and you pay attention, you watch Alabama play, and no, Alabama hasn't been pretty at times, but you know what? They have been really, really good these last few weeks. And the amount of growth you've seen out of this team since their loss to Texas on September 19th has been nothing short of just absolutely extraordinary. And also, don't you think, like, if you beat Georgia, who's clearly the number one team in the country, they've clearly been the best team in the country for the last 3 years, shouldn't that matter? I mean, shouldn't it matter that Georgia has won 45 of the last 46 and 29 straight, and the first team since Yale of 1892 to go 12-0 in three straight years?
Amazing.
I mean, what Georgia has done, like, really, like, we could devote a whole show, just make it an appreciation show for what Kirby Smart and Georgia have done in these last 3 years. Now, we all forecasted this for this season because the schedule was not great. However, you still got to go out there, and they're going to get everybody's best shot. And were they really threatened at all this year? I mean, they weren't perfect. They weren't perfect, know, but were they ever...
Auburn took them behind the woodshed until that last drive.
So you'd say Auburn did the best against them. Out of
I would
everybody.
Have to look at their schedule.
But I think you're, you know, right.
Georgia Tech was a one-score game, wasn't it? And that was just this past weekend.
Yeah, but I don't think the score was really indicative.
I don't either, but I'm just trying to think of games that were close. But Georgia has not been as consistent as they have maybe of the last two seasons.
Yeah.
But guess what? They're 12-0. They're number one.
We'll say one thing, though, is their quarterback has never played in a game of this caliber.
Neither has Milroe.
Well, Milroe has been playing in do-or-die games every single week.
But the magnitude is still greater than anything he's ever played in. The stakes are so much higher.
The Texas game was pretty big. We all said it was going to be the biggest non-conference game of the Nick Saban era. It was pretty big. And going on the road and surviving Auburn is pretty big. Alabama's going to need some help, I think, to make it in. But look, if Florida State loses to Louisville and then Alabama wins, I think it's pretty clear that Alabama will make it in. If Washington loses to Oregon and then Alabama wins again, there could be a debate about whether or not it is a one-loss Oregon team that loses by three on the road at Washington. Do they get in over a one-loss Alabama team who lost by 10 at home to Texas? I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of different ways this could go. But if the favorites win out, And I haven't seen the spread on the Alabama-Georgia line yet. I'm assuming Georgia's favored. If the favorites went out, then obviously Alabama not going to make it in. But if Alabama beats Georgia and the favorites went out, I still think it'll be tough. It'll be tough for them to get in. Really, I think the key game is Louisville. Man, it would have been nice for Alabama if Florida had taken care of business and beaten Florida State in the swamp on Saturday
night. They had their chances.
They did have their chances, and I thought it was going to happen. But it's been that way week in and week out where you think that Alabama's going to catch a break with a team in front of them losing, and somehow they have pulled it out.
If everything goes their way, will Alabama still be in? It's a question. We'll go over. Coming up next, we'll talk to Bama 24/7 Zone Mike Rodak as you listen to Big Noon Sports.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A sunny, cool afternoon, Tuscaloosa high 51. We go below freezing again tonight, clear with a low at 27. Tomorrow's sunny with a high at 56. Thursday, partly sunny during the day. Rain moves in Thursday night, the high at 60. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 53 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
From T-Town to the plains. This is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
It may be a tad chilly, but man, it is absolutely spectacular outside. So enjoy the day. Before we go to Mike Rodak, we are going to go to Tina, who's called in with a question about Alabama-Auburn. Hi, Tina.
Hi, guys. Thank you so much for taking my call. I was just curious, the very last play of the Alabama-Auburn game with the fumble and recovery and what seemed to me to be a touchdown, why it was called back. I haven't really heard anyone say. Can you fill me in on why the touchdown was called back?
You're talking about Terrion Arnold's interception? Oh, are you talking about, or are you talking about the potential safety?
No, it was the interception. Yeah. Okay, so that's a good question.
He stepped out of bounds at the 3.5.
Yeah, that's what it looked like. I don't have confirmation of that, though.
You want me to send you a picture? Which we can do on radio. Can y'all see this? No, I slowed it down and went frame by frame, and I found the one that gives you absolute evidence that his right foot, while trying to tightrope down the sideline into the end zone, hit the line.
Okay.
And if you'll give me your phone number, which I guess we've got, I'll send you the picture.
That's what it looked like, too.
It was so crazy.
It definitely...
Well, the whole officiating was crazy anyway.
No kidding. But, you know...
All right,
Tina, great call. Please call again.
Yeah, please do.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you guys so much. Right. Appreciate it. All right.
You
bye-bye.
Bet. There's pretty clear evidence in the video replay. If you freeze that frame, you'll see that indeed he did step out of bounds. But CBS put the score up. Everybody, I was reading an article yesterday that still said that touchdown counted, which I don't know.
But you're right.
That.
He clearly stepped out of bounds, and I was surprised that they didn't review that right away. But it just took a little bit of time because they ultimately did review it and they took it away.
If they allowed it, would they kick the extra point?
No. I don't think so. That's a Mike Rodak. That's a above
Mike
my
Rodak.
Pay grade.
That's a Bama 24/7.
Yeah, that's a Mike Rodak question.
How you doing, Mike? We're just letting you jump right into the middle of a conversation. How's life in your world?
Good. I'll jump right in because I caught part of that. To be honest, I haven't gone back and looked as deeply as you apparently have on the Terrion Arnold thing to see if he stepped out of bounds or not. I think if it was a consequential play to the game, that obviously it would have been reviewed. In this particular case, it didn't really mean anything one way or the other as far as the result of the game. So that's why I don't think there was really a second look at it. And there was confusion. I think even on the scoreboard in Jordan-Hare, I remember looking up and seeing 33-24, them giving them the touchdown. And then it changed, and I saw the stats, you know, on my computer change too. So, you know, they took it off. And maybe there was an announcement, I forget, by the ref, but
yeah, I mean, and they had it up there on CBS too for quite a while. Maybe even an after, I don't know if they had ended the broadcast, but you know, the fact that Auburn was a 12.5 point underdog, it didn't change the outcome for Vegas.
Right, exactly. So if it was consequential to that,
yes,
they would have looked.
So it would have been a replay, and then they would have kicked the extra
point. But this is the other question: would Alabama be compelled to kick the extra point, even though all the game is for all intents and purposes over? Would they have to line up, or either, you know, just take a knee, or do they have to kick it in that situation?
I was listening to that as well. I was trying to remember because I get mixed up sometimes between the NFL. And the NCAA rule, which I believe are different for that, and I would have to double check myself. I believe college, you don't kick the extra point. I think in the NFL, you do, because I think back to there was a Patriots Bills game in 1998 that was very famous because the Bills were protesting a pass interference call on a touchdown with no time left, and so they actually weren't, they left the field in protest. For the extra point, because it didn't matter to the final score, and the Patriots just lined up with their field goal unit and walked into the end zone.
Oh, that's right. I remember
they should have gone for two, then.
They did.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, the kicker just walked right in. So I believe that rule is still exists at the NFL level, that you still have to line up and take the extra point. And I believe it doesn't exist in college football, but that's something that obviously doesn't come up too often, and I just forget exactly where things stand on those two rules right now.
It could also be up to the discretion of the referee. Like, you know, if you got 20,000 fans on the field and you don't need to necessarily kick it.
Well, whatever they do, it should be a hard and fast rule.
Yeah.
It should not be in anybody's option.
Because
not the referee, not the home team.
I agree.
It's like, I think in the NFL, you have to. Isn't that what you just said, Mike?
Yeah, I'm fairly certain that's still the rule. Again, I get mixed up sometimes, having covered the NFL and now having covered college. Some of the rule differences are kind of lost in my brain somewhere, but I believe that's the case.
So before 4th and 31, did you have your lead written for Auburn upsetting Alabama?
Oh, I had all of it written. I mean, it was if that play was anything short of a touchdown, then Auburn gets the ball and they take a knee and that game's over, you know, within a minute in real time of that play. So I had everything ready. I had everything basically ready to publish, headline, photo, all of it. And it was honestly, like, I've been asked, like, is it shocking? Like, it was surprising. I don't know if I'd call it shocking. Like, this team has converted some pretty tough third downs, and this was obviously a fourth down, but they've made some plays in kind of tight situations like that already this year. And once you're kind of watching Jalen just kind of sit in the pocket and he has all this time and they're not rushing him, and you figure, all right, like, Alabama has some pretty good wide receivers and they're probably better than what Auburn has. And DJ James is not a bad player by any means, but no, you just figured that Alabama had a chance to make a play there, and they did. I mean, it was statistically highly improbable, but for some reason in my mind, I'm like, all right, like, there's still a chance here. But with all that said, in my job, you still have to be ready to have the losing story ready, and I certainly did.
Give us your breakdown / analysis of the 4th and 31 play, both from Alabama's perspective, what they ran, and also Auburn's perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're Alabama, you have to run what you ran. How exactly some of those routes unfolded in the end zone, it's hard to, you know, to see on the TV copy, to see exactly what sort of combination they were and why Isaiah Bond was able to get open in the corner. You know, from Auburn's perspective, I know there's a lot of debate or discussion about, you know, why only rush two and kind of give Jalen all that time. And, you know, I think it makes sense, I think, to get as many guys back into the end zone as you can for that sort of play. You know, I think in the NFL, you see a lot of times teams will put, like, a tight end, you know, a 6'6", 6'7", guy out there. You can bat down a pass. I don't think Auburn did that. I would have to go back and look. Even if they did, that guy's probably in the middle of the field, and I don't think he's getting over to the corner with, you know, the velocity of that Jalen Milroe throw. He wasn't just lofting it up there. I mean, it was being pushed into the corner there, and really accurately so, and underratedly so. I think Isaiah Bond gets a lot of credit, and he should, but it was also a great throw by Jalen Milroe. But to me, you know, I think it's okay that Auburn only rushed two. The confusing part to me was they had a spy. You know, there's that third guy who was right over the middle of the line. He wasn't rushing, but he was just kind of hanging back, which is what a spy does. But, I mean, there was a 0% chance that Jalen Milroe is taking off and running with that football in that situation, because there's just no way you can get 31 yards in the touchdown.
That's what Matt and I have been saying, is essentially 11v10, because that spy is just a wasted player.
It was a wasted player.
Taking yourself out of the play. Yeah, that's the part that didn't make sense to me. But, you know, I think if it was 4th and 45, I think maybe you send 3 or 4 rushers and try to put some pressure on them, and try to force a quicker throw before those routes can develop downfield. But in this case, like, I find it hard to fault the overall, you know, philosophy from Auburn there.
I just don't understand how Bond was matched up one-on-one with a corner.
The corners had the corners of the end zone, and then they doubled up the three inside.
And the safety, for whatever reason, on that side bit and went in the other direction, leaving that corner, you know, with his back to the quarterback one-on-one. And again, Mike, I mentioned, you know, Jalen just had the perfect aiming point, and that's the pylon. And I bet if you stretch that pylon up 10 yards straight up, he would have hit that thing. I mean, it was an absolute perfect throw.
Yeah, and that's you talk about, like, his progression and development. I mean, that's where it is, because, you know, his first couple years and even earlier this year, like, there's throws where he had time and everything was perfect and just, I mean, misfired. There's a lot of, go back to, man, I think it was like the Arkansas game. I remember a throw 5 yards over the middle and, you know, you one hop it. And it's just like, it's infuriating, I'm sure, as fans, because it's an easy throw and it's, you know, you're not being pressured and the receiver's open. In this case, it's like, you had the receiver open, you made the throw, you had all the time, and you made it work. So that was certainly a sign of a lot of progress on his end.
I want to ask you another rules question. That something came up in this game that I went, wow, is that true? Also, I want to know your personal reaction. What did you physically do? Mike Rodak is our guest on Big Noon Sports.
Down to the plains. This is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
And our guest from Bama 24/7 is Mike Rodak. Mike, tell everybody before I fire a couple of questions at you, how folks can read and keep up with you.
Yeah, Bama247.com and on Twitter at Mike Rodak.
Cool. All right. What did you physically do? I've asked all our guests this week, when you observed that play, did you throw your hands up? Did you yell? Did you scream? Or did you just start changing your lead?
It started working. And, you know, the press box typically clears out, you know, by the end of a game. So there wasn't a ton of people there, but obviously cheering is not allowed in the press box, and any sort of noise that's disruptive to anyone isn't allowed either. So really everyone's just busy. It just goes from everybody's busy trying to get ready their stories for, you know, Auburn winning, Alabama losing, to then having to change everything and frantically change headlines and photos and tweak scores and stats and all that. And so it's really just focusing on that, to be honest. And people just kind of looked at each other like, whoa, what just happened there? But, you know, it's a working environment, so nobody's really reacting. But I'll say this, as far as what we talked about the last segment, I did look it up during the break. And, yeah, college, you don't have to kick the extra point if it doesn't affect the outcome at the end of the game. NFL, you used to, but it actually got changed a couple years ago after that Minneapolis Miracle play, the Stephon Diggs catch against the Saints in the playoffs, and the Saints left the field in protest, and the Vikings had to kick the extra point. But you don't have to do that anymore in the NFL.
Ah, interesting.
Wait a minute. So they leave it up to who? Can they kick it if they want to?
Can you kick it if you want to? I would have to check that.
Okay.
I think it allows you the option of not kicking it. But you're right. I mean, there's certain reasons. Like Will Reichard, for instance, imagine if this was his last game and he's tied for the NCAA record for points, and you know, he needs one more point to break the record, and that's the extra point at the end. Like, that would have been a big deal for him. So, yeah, I mean, it's I don't think it's ever really happened where people have opted to do it, but I guess maybe there is an exception in the rules for it.
Looking ahead to the SEC championship game on Saturday against Georgia, what does Alabama need to do to pull off the upset? And I must confess, I haven't seen the line yet.
4.5.
4.5, Georgia. All right.
I think it's split up to 5 even after the Iron Bowl I've seen. As high as 5, which it's still, it ended at 6 2 years ago, the 2021 game, which is the biggest underdog that Alabama's been since 2010, or since 2009 even. And there's only been 4 games in which Alabama's been an underdog in the last 13 years, and all 4 have come against Georgia. This is the 4th one. So you can make an argument that if they win this game, it's the biggest upset, the most consequential upset of Nick Saban's, of the Nick Saban era, I'd say post, 2009, after the first championship. I think that's fair to say. And I think it would be a bigger upset than 2 years ago. Because I think 2 years ago was all about, can Alabama's offense move the ball against Georgia's defense, which was completely lights out that year? And the answer was yes. Obviously, they had Bryce Young. They had John Metchie before he got hurt. They had Jamison Williams. And they were able to do that. I think this year, it's shifted more to me towards, can Alabama's defense stop Georgia's offense? Because Georgia's offense, under the radar, is one of the top 5 in the country. And it's right up there with LSU, which gave this defense problems. And we all saw this defense struggle against Iran, against Auburn. How much that carries over to this game, I don't know. But, I mean, this is a top 8 passing offense for Georgia as well, with Brock Bowers, who gave them issues 2 years ago. And, Carson Beck's had a really good year. And Ladd McConkey, like, this is a really good offense. And the defense has slipped a little bit for Georgia. So maybe it's a question of how much Alabama can do against their defense. But I still think the bigger question to me is, what can Georgia's offense do against Alabama? And, if they play the way they did against Auburn, this defense, I think they're going to be in some deep trouble. I think Nick Saban has kind of already said that and warned against that. So they need to get a whole lot better, but that can't happen. You know, I think it's possible. I think it will be the biggest upset of the post 2009 Saban era.
I just looked it up, and this is the ESPN scoreboard website, and they now have Georgia as a 6-point favorite. It's a pretty big jump.
Depends on the book, but I think as dramatic and thrilling as the Iron Bowl finish was, I think everybody also saw the way Alabama played for the first 59 minutes of that game. And, you know, that cuts into some of the momentum that they had with the LSU, really ever since the second half of the Tennessee game. I think second half of the Tennessee game, they outscore them big. LSU game, you know, they win a big game. Kentucky, they blow them out. Chattanooga, they blow them out. And then they sort of lost that a little bit against Auburn. And that's something that Saban's talked about. You don't want to lose momentum. Sometimes it's hard to get it back. But I think it cuts into the idea that this is a completely transformed team, because they were doing some of the same things that they were doing wrong earlier in the year. Touchdowns, callback penalties, bad snaps, kind of weird boneheaded mistakes on Jalen Milroe's part, you know, throwing the ball ahead of the line of scrimmage twice. And those things kind of came back. So are they completely new? No. I mean, it was a tough environment, a rivalry game. Yes. But was it an Auburn team that just lost to New Mexico State? Yes. So I think people on the outside kind of look at that and lean a little bit more towards Georgia than they probably would have. Granted, Georgia didn't play lights out against Georgia Tech by any means either. But I think overall, people are kind of looking for evidence that Alabama can play with the number one team in the country. And that, to the slightest extent, took a hit on Saturday.
How do you think Kevin Steele plays this on Saturday with the Alabama defense? Do you play him straight up? Do you do something special for Bowers, who I think we all expect is going to play and be very healthy? Or do you do something exotic? Or is it by this point in the season, you are who you are?
Yeah, I mean, they've shifted some things around in the secondary in particular. With Caleb Downs playing star this past game against Auburn, whereas that was Malachi Moore's job, but then there was also for a while Terry Arnold's job when Moore was hurt, when Jalen Key was hurt too at safety. So, you know, they've had some different combinations of guys. You know, I think the biggest question for me is whether Moore plays star and Downs is deep, or whether Downs plays star and Moore is deep. Sometimes it's a question of, do you go with your three defensive linemen package with, you know, three linebackers and keep either Braswell or Turner off the field, or, you know, rotate them? Or do you play both of those guys and go a little bit lighter and play two defensive linemen? I think against this Georgia team, against this offensive line, against this running game, you probably want to go a little bit heavier. But that might take Braswell or Turner off the field. And, I mean, Carson Beck has barely been touched all year. I forget where exactly he's at in terms of the number of times he's been sacked, but, like, it's a small fraction of what Jalen Milroe has been sacked. Two different quarterbacks, but I mean, this Georgia offensive line is good. They're a very efficient offense, very clean operation. So you want to disrupt that somehow, whether it's more blitzing or whatever it might be, we'll have to see. But again, I think for me, it starts in the secondary and how exactly they pair some of those guys up.
Alabama traditionally has just loved man-to-man, and I know that there's been zone mixed in there, but if they do play man defense, who do you think is going to get the majority of the snaps going against Brock Bowers?
It's either going to be Downs or Malachi Moore in my mind. Again, which I think plays into which one plays star. But you also could have one of those. You could have your dime defense on the field and have, you know, money, have the guy who plays money play that spot, and have your star do something else. I mean, there's different ways to do it. I think Brian Branch 2 years ago got most of those snaps against Bowers, and, you know, really good player for it just because he's physical and can tackle well. But even, you know, he had some trouble against Bowers' ability to kind of run around and get loose. So I personally would lean towards a more experienced guy in Malachi Moore than putting a freshman on him.
Yeah.
But I also think Caleb Downs is, you know, pretty athletic player, instinctive player who tackles really well. So that, you know, could indicate that he's a good player to put on Bowers too.
All right, our rules question for the entire table here. In the game, Milroe rolled out. He was getting significant pressure, and he just kind of pitched like a two-hand chest pass the ball out of bounds, okay? Auburn guy catches it. There was some question whether or not the ball was going to cross the line of scrimmage or to be, you know, be intentional grounding. But the Auburn player caught it. And it was, believe it or not, it was Gary Danielson that explained it. That line of scrimmage on a play like that extends past out of bounds. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, so
go ahead, Mike.
Watching live, it did come up in the press box. We were all kind of thinking, like, are they going to throw the flag there? Because the ball didn't get back to the line of scrimmage, and we couldn't really see a guy catch it. I mean, we're up in the corner and can't really see where the ball lands on the sideline amongst all the bodies. So our first reaction was, you know, that probably should be grounding. We thought Alabama, you know, got away with one, and that was after they got away with the face mask penalty at the very beginning of the game, and kind of saying, man, like, they're getting some calls today.
Yeah.
And I think I even mentioned that, you know, on our message board, and everybody, you know, kind of snapped back and said, oh, no, like, the Auburn player caught it, and you sound like Gary Danielson. And I would assume, and I think it kind of goes along with, like, a batted pass. You know, if a quarterback is outside the pocket and his pass gets batted down, does not get back to the line of scrimmage because of that, you can't fault him for that. And I think the same logic would apply. Yes, you do extend the line of scrimmage all the way outside the out-of-bounds line, but if the ball is impeded by a player from the other team, then it doesn't really apply because you can't assume where it would have landed. So that's what I think saved him in that situation. But it was close to being another, again, kind of boneheaded penalty on his end where he's just kind of not making the right decision. And even, you know, the last the third down, the third and 26 before the fourth and 31, where he got called for being downfield, he should have ran the ball. And that's something Nick Saban said too on his TV show after the game, was like, if he had just tucked and run the ball and he had plenty of time, he probably could have got down to the 5 yard line. But for whatever reason, he decided he wanted to keep throwing the ball there. And that's when he was across the line and got himself in trouble.
All right, Mike, final question for you. Let's assume Alabama upsets Georgia. What is the most likely way for Alabama to make it into the college football playoffs?
Either a loss by Texas or Florida State. I think those are the two safest options, if you will, for Alabama. Because if it's just Alabama beating Georgia, and if Texas wins, if Florida State wins, if either Oregon or Washington wins, and if Michigan wins, then you're really in a hard spot, because then you're trying to say to the committee that we deserve to be in over Florida, which is undefeated. And Florida at that point would have proven to some extent that they can play without Jordan Travis, even though they won't have him for the playoff. And Oregon, even if they win as a one-loss conference champion, it's already ranked higher than you. They would have just picked up a top three or four win against Washington. Like, I wouldn't count on that winning in Alabama's favor in terms of being, you know, the last playoff spot. So I think the safest route is Texas loses the Big 12 to Oklahoma State. Alabama would be in my mind. Or Florida State loses the ACC to Louisville. Alabama would be in my mind. But if neither of those happens, then again, I think you're really hoping for something else. And at this point, I really don't see it, to be honest. I think Alabama's playing in the Fiesta Bowl if that happens.
Does Georgia have any shot to make it in, do you think, if they lose?
I do. I think if Alabama, same logic would apply. If Texas and Florida State both lose, then I think Alabama and Georgia would both be in. I think Texas and Florida State would both be out with a loss, obviously. And then it would be Alabama, Georgia, Michigan, and the Pac-12 winner.
Yeah, so many games that matter this weekend.
it's kind of hard to focus, kind of hard to figure out, bouncing around in your brain. With if this win, win, how? And it just keeps going around.
Well, the good part of it is that it's kind of spread out. So the Pac-12 game is Friday night, and then during day Saturday is the Big 12 game. And so at that point, you already know about Texas and the Oregon-Washington result. And then Alabama plays, it might be at the same time as the ACC game, and then or maybe that's at night. In the Big 12 game's at night, which doesn't really matter for Alabama unless Michigan somehow loses, but that would be, you know, pretty shocking. So at least it's spread out.
All right, Mike, appreciate your time, and we'll be following you on Bama 24-7, and let's see what happens this Saturday. It's going to be crazy.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
Mike Rodak from Bama 24-7 on Big Noon Sports. Let's take a few phone calls, shall we?
We shall.
205-342-9904. Give us a shout.
Laura Lee Thompson is known as the Bama Broker. She's a Tuscaloosa native, an Alabama graduate, and the only realtor in town with Wall Street experience. A skilled negotiator, Laura Lee knows how to buy low and sell high. And the Bama Broker isn't just going to show you houses. No, Laura Lee is going to educate you on the market, guide you to homes that fit your budget, and teach you how to sell your home for its maximum profit. Throughout the entire process, the Bama Broker will equip you with the tools you need to both buy a home and build financial wealth through home ownership. Trust me, the Bama Broker, who's as roll tide as houndstooth, will get you across the goal line. That's Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama Broker with Advantage Realty Group. You can reach her at 205-790-7229. Again, that's 205-790-7229. And you can also email her at lauralee@thebamabroker.com. That's lauralee@thebamabroker.com.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A sunny, cool afternoon, Tuscaloosa's high 51. We go below freezing again tonight, clear with a low at 27. Tomorrow's sunny with a high at 56. Thursday, partly sunny during the day. Rain moves in Thursday night, the high at 60. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 53 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
More Big Noon Sports coming up.
If you'd like to join the show, just hit the digits, 205-342-9904. Quickly, hands on buzzers. Who's the number nine team in the nation?
Nebraska.
It's Missouri.
Oh, yeah.
They just don't, they just seem to be an afterthought. They're 10-2.
Their running back, who was a co-SEC Offensive Player of the Week, and his name escapes me right now, that kid is good.
He's brutal. I mean, he will, he just soon run over you. And I think he ended up leading the nation. I'm going to look that up. But first,
another day.
Another Colorado update?
Another day, another player leading Colorado's recruiting class. And so yesterday, kind of speculated, hey, did Deion Sanders issues with geography and not knowing where Mount Rushmore was cause some players and their parents to be like, hey, do we really want to play for this dude? And I think, you know, in looking at it a little bit deeper, last week after Winston Watkins Jr., who had committed to Colorado, he reopened his recruitment. Deion Sanders went on a bit of a rant, and he proposed that the NCAA modify its recruiting policy to prevent players who have already committed to a program from keeping their options open. And this is what he said. He said, a kid ain't even faithful to his girlfriend. You think he's going to be faithful to a school? Come on, man. That's an emotional thing. What I wish is that the NCAA would do, if you're committed somewhere, you can't go on any other visits. If you're committed, that means you're committed. You can't go on no other visits. Why wouldn't you be committed, but you're still letting kids go on visits? That means you're just playing. Well, apparently that did not sit well with several of the recruits who had committed to Colorado, because since those remarks were uttered, he lost a four-star quarterback from the 2025 cycle, Antoine Hill Jr. That was on Sunday. And then Monday, he lost another quarterback, Danny O'Neill, in the 2025 cycle. And then late last night, he lost a running back, Jamaris Walker, who decided he needed to reopen his commitment. So, you know, Deion Sanders, maybe not making all the right moves. Colorado finished the season 4-8 overall after starting 3-0. Deion Sanders was the talk of the country. Tim Brando came on this show week after week saying the biggest story in college football is Deion Sanders. Well, I'll tell you what. Deion Sanders is no longer the biggest story in college football.
No, he is, because of he's failing. You know, earlier in the year, it was all hail Deion.
I mean,
I wonder if Deion stops recruiting when another player commits to, say, UCLA. According to his rules, that's the way it should be, right?
He doesn't want to work.
You know,
By the way, I don't blame him. Like, if I was a coach, that would just drive me insane.
But doesn't he need to just be quiet? But the thing is,
it's never been that way. That's why there's a difference between a verbal commitment and a signed commitment. It has been that way since you and I have been covering college football.
Maybe they should just be able to sign anytime. I don't know.
That's not a bad idea.
Yeah. Then you are committed. We got to go. Cody Schrader is the running back.
Securing the best mortgage possible requires a lender who has knowledge, is trustworthy, and treats customers like family. And no one is better at all of this than the mortgage miracle worker, Haley Sansing. Based right here in Tuscaloosa, Haley Sansing has spent decades working in the mortgage industry. With Haley, it's personal, holding your hand from contract to close. With Haley, it's about one thing, you. Call Haley on her cell, yes, her cell, 205-792-1813. That's 205-792-1813. Let Haley help you.
NLMS number 230376.
WTBC Tuscaloosa and W265CG Tuscaloosa, a Town Square Media station. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
from the Fox Sports studios in Los Angeles. Here's Monsi Bolaños.
One day after firing first-year coach Frank Reich, Carolina Panthers owner David Tepper addressed the media, and this is what he had to say about his rookie quarterback.
As far as Bryce Young is concerned, and I think everybody in this building would share this sentiment, we are totally confident in that pick. Okay, I think the people that made that pick first, you know, would be totally confident in that. And for me, I'm totally confident in agreeing with that pick.
In other NFL news, Colts running back Jonathan Taylor suffered a thumb injury against the Bucs that is requiring further evaluation and puts his status in doubt going forward. This is according to the NFL Network. The Colts face the Titans in Week 13. And in the NBA, Pelicans guard CJ McCollum plans to take part in Shoe Round Wednesday and could return to action as early as that night against the visiting Sixers if all goes well. McCollum last played on November 4th when he suffered a right collapse lung.
This is the Big Noon Sports Network.
We are back on Big Noon Sports. Matt, Lars, Noah, the gang is all here. Coming up in just a few minutes, congratulations to Jacksonville State because they are going bowling, and I think that's cool. And one of their longtime assistants and longtime football coach for like 50 years, Tuffy Crow, is going to join us in just a few minutes. I mentioned Eli Drinkwitz and Missouri. Here, how about a quick dive into Eli? First of all, you would think that Eli would be short for?
Elijah.
It's Elijah. I didn't know that. It's not like you're going to get that in Trivial Pursuit at Thanksgiving. But it can't, apparently,
which to I this, dominate
this bio. That's because I wasn't active.
Yeah, why are you sitting on the sidelines, man?
Well, I didn't know how long it was going to last, and you know, I was going to go meet my son.
You guys needed to leave.
We needed to leave, and I didn't want to jump in there and dominate.
Just to be clear, Matt and Karen came to my house for Thanksgiving. We had a great time, and. You know, like after the food has been served and dishes done, like, let's get out the board games. And yep. I have old school Trivial Pursuit, the original Trivial
the
Pursuit.
The original card, the original box, everything. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So I was ready to get it on, but Matt had to leave.
Well, you were doing quite well, I guess quite well. As opposed to the others at the table. Anyway, it says here, or it doesn't say, he ever played college football. How many coaches do you know other than Jack Crow who didn't ever play the game? Or maybe played in high school but not in college? Very few.
McDaniel at, is that his name? The head coach of the Dolphins?
I keep wanting to say... Is it Josh? Jim?
No. Yeah, I'm not sure. I think there are some NFL coaches that haven't played.
I've probably already given you too much information on Eli Drinkwitz. Although, I like him. I think he...
I like him,
really,
too.
He gets it, I think.
Yep.
But I just wonder, why is his name not mentioned for some of these hot jobs? Well, I think it's because you have to look at what he was doing at Missouri the last 3 years.
Yeah, before his 10-2. He almost got canned.
Yeah, he was 500 for 3 years.
Yeah.
But before that, he was App State. He was 12-1. So, I mean, he has, I would think, a record that would deserve some consideration, but you never hear it. Of course, it could be handled behind the scenes. And that's the reason that we don't hear it. Well, but one more and I'll go on.
Yep.
Do you know who he was at Auburn?
Did not.
He was at Auburn with Malzahn in 2004. And then he went back. No, he was at Springdale High School in Arkansas. He was with Malzahn then.
Yep.
And then he went to Auburn as the quality control coach and was on the staff 2010 when Auburn won
so
it all.
So Gus kind of took care of him.
Yep, he did. But, by the way, could you please define quality control coach?
You make sure that the control is quality.
All right. I know you have another subject, but I brought it up for one. We both like the guy. He's ranked 9th in the country right now. And because he's outside of the 8, you know, he's not getting a whole lot of attention, nor is Missouri. But you mentioned their running back, Cody Schrader.
Yeah.
If wherever they go bowling, watch him. He's a brutal guy. I'm trying to think of somebody that.
Do you think he'll get a Heisman invite?
Probably.
I hope so.
Yep. I hope he does too. I mean, he's an incredible runner. He has just enough speed to turn the corner.
Yeah.
But if you want to talk about a guy that runs behind his pads, between the tackles, just watch him.
He's going to be a good NFL player, I think. So this comes from our buddy Pat Forty, and I really like and respect Pat. I have traveled literally all over the world with him, and I know some people in this state aren't huge Pat Forty fans, but I think he does a great job, and he is very much plugged in. And he has reported that for much of the day on Saturday, it appeared that Texas A&M was about to hire Mark Stoops. Uh-huh. It seemed like it was almost a done deal, and things were so far down the road that sources told Sports Illustrated, presumably that's Pat, that Stoops was telling some staff members, friends, and boosters Saturday night that he was leaving for College Station. But then something happened. Now, what actually was it? The word coming out of Aggieland was that the offer was rescinded. And then at 1:02 a.m. Eastern time, Stoops put out a tweet that said, in part, "I knew in my heart I couldn't leave the University of Kentucky right now." So when you put out a tweet like that at 1:02 a.m., that means like you were probably you had one foot out the door, and you're doing a little CYA to make sure that you'll be welcomed back. But, since Stoops was telling people just hours earlier that he basically was gone, it certainly appears that Texas A&M was the one that pulled the plug on the deal. That certainly seems to be the more believable scenario. So why would Texas A&M do this?
Money.
And I believe, and so do sources who told Pat this, that Regents or, big dollar boosters told Ross Bjork that they would not support the hiring of Stoops. And here's the deal. As a general rule, don't let off-campus people decide who your coach is going to be. That is a really bad strategy. ADs are paid a hell of a lot of money to make these decisions. And, if they're not good decisions, you know what you do?
Fire the AD.
Fire the AD and get a new AD. But, this isn't a first in college football where boosters jump in and disrupt things.
Well, now, the most obvious would across Stoops, the state,
would Stoops have been a bad hire for A&M? He has done a great job in making Kentucky competitive, which is no small task. He's won 10 games twice in 2018 and 2021. He's beat Florida 3 years in a row. He's beat Louisville 5 years in a row. He's the winningest coach in Kentucky history. And he's really popular among the fans. But so why wouldn't A&M want him? Well, past two seasons, he's just gone 14-11 overall, 6-10 in the SEC. If you really dig deep into his record, it's been padded by playing three cupcake non-conference opponents every year. Almost 40% of his career wins are against low-level FBS or FCS opponents. He's been paid a lot of money, and he's never won an SEC East title in just two winning seasons, SEC records, excuse me, just two winning SEC records in 11 seasons. He got in a public feud with John Calipari. So there's just a lot of stuff. Right, with Stoops, and I think that A&M boosters, they just said, hey, Ross, we're not going to stand for this. And I think Ross caved. I'm surprised, but I really trust Pat's reporting here. And so A&M quickly moved on to Elko.
If you're one of those big time boosters and you've just stroked a check for $25 million because you wanted Jimbo out, do you not deserve a vote on who's coming in?
Fair question. I would say no. What do you think?
If you want to vote, I don't know.
Let football people make the football decisions, right?
Yeah, but if you're going to let him make the decision, let him make the decision. Don't call him up at 1 o'clock in the morning and say, I don't like this guy. Or should he have gone to them first? Because obviously he didn't. But if you're not going to go to them, why are you going to let him influence the decision?
And Elko almost didn't come. Sources tell 40 that Elko, he left A&M's private jet waiting on the tarmac for about 90 minutes late Sunday night before committing to take the job and getting on the plane. So, you know, he's talking to his wife. He's talking to his agent. He's talking to the AD.
You know what that tells me? I would never want to coach in Texas. All right. When we come back, Tuffy Crow, the one and only, will be with us on
That's
Big.
It's always sport. Like this at A&M.
Did you hear what I said about another school that tends to let their boosters run things? Auburn,
yeah.
They've been doing that for quite a while. All right. And you know what? They usually cave, too. All right. We'll be back in a minute.
It's back. Laura Lee Thompson is known as the Bama Broker. She's a Tuscaloosa native, an Alabama graduate, and the only realtor in town with Wall Street experience. A skilled negotiator, Laura Lee knows how to buy low and sell high. And the Bama Broker isn't just going to show you houses. No, Laura Lee is going to educate you on the market, guide you to homes that fit your budget, and teach you how to sell your home for its maximum profit. Throughout the entire process, the Bama Broker will equip you with the tools you need to both buy a home and build financial wealth through home ownership. Trust me, the Bama Broker, who's as roll tide as houndstooth, will get you across the goal line. That's Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama Broker with Advantage Realty Group. You can reach her at 205-790-7229. Again, that's 205-790-7229. And you can also email her at lauralee@thebamabroker.com. That's lauralee@thebamabroker.com.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A sunny, cool afternoon, Tuscaloosa's high 51. We go below freezing again tonight, clear with a low at 27. Tomorrow's sunny with a high at 56. Thursday, partly sunny during the day. Rain moves in Thursday night, the high at 60. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 53 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Covering SEC sports like kudzu on the roadside. This is Big Noon Sports.
It's Matt, Lars, Noah, and my main man, Larry Tuffy Crow from Hueytown, Alabama. He's a Golden Gopher, ladies and gentlemen. How you doing,
Tuffy? Part of the Golden Gopher. Yes, sir.
Hey, we were just talking going on the break about Eli Drinkwich. I was looking at his bio, and apparently he never played college football. That's kind of rare. Jack Crow is another one.
Yeah.
But those are the only two that come to mind immediately.
I did not know that. Usually it's tough. Now, I tell you, more people are going in starting as student assistants now in a program, then a GA when they graduate, and then they'll get on to full-time, and then they just keep bumping up. I do see more of it now than you used to, but not much.
Coach, I'm just really interested in your career. You have been at so many different stops. What has it been like for you just on a personal level? I always am very intrigued with how it impacts family and just even the person when you are hopscotching around the, in your case, mostly the South, but just really all around the country for other coaches who choose to go into this profession. What are some of the pitfalls of that?
A lot of that is your family, the kid, your kids, really. They're moving school systems. They get started in a system, go a few years, and then you make a move, and they have to uproot. And that's probably why both of y'all know. That's probably why so many coaching staff families are so close. So a new staff comes together, however many of them now, and so they're all in a new spot. The families seem to gravitate because the wives and the kids and all are strange to an environment. And they seem to be able to, you've got a little family within a family, I guess. And that's probably the hardest part is your kids.
I wrote a book with Bruce Arians, and BA told me the absolute low point of his career when he got fired as offensive coordinator at Alabama. And that wasn't the low point. The low point was having to go into his daughter's room and tell her that they're going to move again. And she just absolutely started crying because, she was in the middle of her freshman year of high school. Did you ever have a moment like that with your daughter or your son?
I did not, thank goodness. But I know Bruce did. Hey, that firing turned out pretty good, though, didn't it? He went from coaching.
He got hired by the Colts, and they kind of put him in charge. Do we take Ryan Leaf or do we take Peyton Manning? And I think Bruce, he made the right
made
pick
a good
there.
Call.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Matt knows Rick Christoffel, one of our best friends, was with us at UAB, came from Mississippi State, was on Jackie Sherrill's staff there when Watson came in 1995 to UAB. Rick's oldest daughter was halfway through her junior year in high school. Moved her from Starkville High to Vestavia, and she did great. But Rick later on said, you know, if I'd have had to do it over again, I'd have probably left Connie and the girls over there and let at least the oldest one, Chrissy, finish at Starkville where all her friends were. But yeah, that's one of the pitfalls. I know Bruce has said a lot about missing Jake. Being able to watch Jake, his son, who played for us at UAB, during
Manny
that career.
Had a leg.
Oh my goodness! He kicked that field goal his last play of his college career. Kicked that field goal at Tulane at the Superdome and won it.
And it's pretty cool too that he made it to the NFL.
Yeah,
you know, he played for the Bills.
He sure did.
I think now he like sells jewelry to the stars or something, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah.
He does a lot of stuff, yeah. He's got a lot of irons in the fire.
And when he kicked that field goal at the Superdome, there were seven people there to watch.
There were seven.
Do you remember how empty it was when we'd play down there? It was just what is it? Somebody said, Gary Sanders may have said, you could practice archery in the stands.
What a great line.
Hey, Devin, you remember y'all both been there. You know, the seats are different shades. They're different colors or different shades around the Superdome. Somebody said they did that, make it look like more people were in there.
That's exactly why they did it.
It was bad now.
I always had a good time in New Orleans, though, didn't we? Next subject.
I had a great time in New Orleans.
Hey, Tuffy, you were, I guess you may have spent most of your career at Jack State. I don't know if it's tied with UAB or not, but that's not my point, really. How cool is it to see the Gamecocks go bowling?
How about the Gamecocks, huh? I tell you what, on your first year in Division or FBS, I guess it's called now, to go be able to go to a bowl game and have 8 wins. I tell you guys, man, we've talked about this before. Rich Rodriguez and this bunch up here can coach now. They have done an unbelievable job. And just to be able for these seniors to experience the bowl. Seniors have experienced when we were in the playoffs here before, but that's a different animal. You're going on a real, real business trip when you're going somewhere in the playoffs, but y'all know how you're entertained and you have a good time at a bowl game. So I hope they get somewhere where they can enjoy themselves. They deserve it.
I think this illustrates right here how small the coaching world is, that Rich Rod used to live right across the lake from Bruce Arians and Christoffel up in Reynolds Plantation, Georgia.
When he first got up here, he told me, he said, "Oh, I wish I'd have never sold that lake place."
Yeah, I didn't realize he did. We had him on like two weeks ago. But just talk about the job that he has done. I mean, because the difficulties, the inherent challenges in that position, and just what do you think? Just again about Coach Rodriguez.
I think him starting with him, and then going all the way through the assistants. Who he brought most of them, a lot of them with him from Louisiana Monroe, where he had been with Terry Bowden. And then his biggest hire, he told me the first day is here, he said, "I'm hiring the best offensive line coach in football, Rick Trickett." And great story. Trickett was driving from West Virginia to Monroe, Louisiana, to take the offensive line coaching job with Terry Bowden. Rich calls him. He stops by here to take the job. Turned around, went to West Virginia, got some clothes, and came back. So, but I tell you, the guy, Rich, he's probably told y'all too, he got a great little line. He said, "Hey, they need to put a statue of me in Tuscaloosa." If it wasn't for Rich, it wouldn't have Nick down there.
That's right. he's very self-deprecating and honest about that too. It's a really funny thing, but yeah, no, I think he's done a phenomenal job. Just shifting gears a little bit, you obviously pay attention to what Alabama is doing. Your thoughts on the Iron Bowl?
Wow. I'm watching it on TV, and I told Matt, Jane had gone downstairs. She couldn't even watch it anymore. And I'm watching it. I got nervous. I got on the treadmill walking. The last minute or so, I'm like, oh, it's what, 4th and 31 or whatever it was? It was 4th and goal from the 31. I'm like, this ain't going to be Alabama's favor. And then, goodness gracious, what a play. on both sides, the pass was incredible, and then the catch and him be able to get his foot down. But I tell you, that's got to be as good. The Alabama-Auburn games have – through all the years, you know, the pick six go all the way back to the two block punts Auburn did at Legion Field. It seems like it's every year. I was on the sideline with my son at that time. It was probably 10. Matt, when we were with the Birmingham Stallions, and Coach Fuller, Jimmy Fuller, who I'd worked for up here, was coaching at Alabama. And I got to see 2 years in a row from the sideline, one the Van Tiffin kick and one bow over the top. So those games have been just amazing through as long as I can remember. And I'm old. I can remember a little way back. That one the other day may take the cake, though. That I don't know how they did it, but they did it.
Yeah. The only one is just far as sheer down-the-wire excitement I think that could compare is 85 with Tiffin's kick.
Yeah, that one. And we were standing, Jason, my son, and I were standing on the sideline. Matt, Lawrence, this Joe Namath, Leroy Jordan, Bill Battle are standing by us, just happened to be. And Namath is just dogging the Auburn players. I'm thinking, you know what? What a great rivalry. This guy hadn't played here in how many years, and they're still on him.
And he's from Pennsylvania.
I love that.
Tuffy, can you hang on through a break?
I can.
I'll get you off the treadmill. All right. Duffy Crow, longtime college football coach and pro with the Stallions. Boy, those were some good times. We won't go into that, but we will come back on Big Noon Sports.
Alabama, Georgia.
10-5, touchdown, Alabama.
It's the SEC Championship live from Atlanta, Georgia.
Let's get out of here again. Alabama wins it.
Cheer on the Tide this Saturday as the Crimson Tide look to get revenge on the Bulldogs. Our coverage starts at noon from Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, Georgia, on your home for Alabama football.
Brought to you by Birmingham Racecourse. BirminghamRacecourse.com. You can be a winner, too.
The best sports talk in Alabama. This is Big Noon Sports.
It is Big Noon Sports. Wow, what a sunny, brilliant day. A little chilly, but I'm loving it. And on the show here today is Tuffy Crow, and we continue to chat with him. I looked up real quick. You know, these people try and predict who's going to play in what bowl game. It amazes me how accurate they are at times. But Tuffy, I think the first one I saw Jack State might be going to was the Camellia Bowl, which is in Montgomery. But now I'm seeing the Cure Bowl. Raise your hands if you know that, where that's played. Cure Bowl?
I can't. Where is that one? That's a new one.
That's in Orlando. Not a bad trip.
Well, that's a good trip. But, I would personally, me being an old Jack State guy back in the day when the Jack State Troy rivalry was so great, I'd love to go to the Camellia Bowl and play Troy or New Orleans Bowl. I think Troy plays for the conference championship this weekend. If they win, I think, from what I understand, they go to New Orleans. But any of them be great for these players.
I think they've got South Alabama playing in Montgomery.
But, really?
I mean, Alabama? How many are going bowling? Alabama, Auburn, Troy, South Alabama, Jacksonville State. Am I leaving anybody out? That's all from a state of about 4 million people.
Coach, pretty good.
I'd love to get your analysis of these championship games this weekend. And we don't have to dig too deep, but just sort of your gut reaction of what you think is going to happen. And I'll just go in order in which they are played. The big one on Friday night, 7 o'clock Central in Las Vegas, is Oregon at Washington for the Pac-12 championship. I think if you're an Alabama fan, you obviously want Oregon to win this game. And then, you know, worst case scenario for Alabama, if they end up winning, becomes a debate of whether or not a one-loss Oregon gets in over a one-loss Alabama. Your thoughts on Oregon, Washington, and does Bo Nix have the Heisman Trophy wrapped up?
I don't know. I wish he would. I think personally that Oregon may be playing the best football of anybody in the country right now. And being State of Alabama guy, I'd love to see them beat Washington and help Alabama out. Then I tell you what, I'd hate to be on that committee though. Like you said, Alabama wins. What if Oregon wins? Good. Nice. Who are you going to put in?
And then Big 12 championship on Saturday at 11 o'clock Central Time in Arlington, Texas. You got Oklahoma State playing Texas. Boy, Alabama fans, they got to be rooting hard for Oklahoma State.
They're Cowboy fans this weekend, aren't they? I don't think Oklahoma State can beat Texas. I've known Mike Gundy for years. Matt, you know, Kale, his brother, worked with us at UAB. And Bill Clay, that was with us at UAB, had just retired at 80 years old this past season. Was at Oklahoma State. But I can't. Texas is playing well right now. Goodness.
Boy, they made a mess of Texas Tech.
Yeah.
And
then, again, I'm just going in order that these games are played. Then you have the SEC championship game, 3 o'clock Central in Atlanta, Georgia against Bama. Do you give Alabama and Georgia's now favored? It just keeps going up. Last I saw, it was 6.
Yeah,
I think it started about 4. But what is Alabama? What is the path to victory for Alabama in this game?
I think that it's all going to depend on quarterback play. I mean, the Milroe's is playing lights out. Even Auburn trying to keep a spy on him on defense the other day. But I think I've learned a long time ago, if I bet, I wouldn't bet against Nick Saban. But Georgia, good. What is it, 29 in a row, y'all? They've won now?
Yeah.
You guys know how it is. When you're winning and you get in that mindset, it's just it's different. For some reason, you don't think you can get beat. I'd like to see Alabama win it. I'm just not sure they can. With all the talent Georgia has.
And then, let's say for the sake of argument that Alabama upsets Georgia, we won't even deal with the Big Ten championship because I think Michigan is absolutely going to throttle Iowa. Michigan right now is a 23-point favorite. That's at Saturday, 7 o'clock in Indy. But the game that absolutely could decide whether or not Alabama makes it in or not is going to be Saturday, 7 o'clock Eastern, Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte, North Carolina. Number 10, Louisville, playing Florida State. Florida State, obviously, without their stud quarterback. They're playing with a backup now. And Louisville coming off a loss to Kentucky. Can Louisville pull off the upset?
I think they can. They hard to play with. You lose that trigger guy. They're talented all around, and the backup quarterback seems to be doing a good job, but he's not going to win a game for you. If Louisville can put some pressure on him on defense and try to make him make a mistake, get uneasy, not let him get set his feet in the pocket, I think Louisville's got a chance.
It's crazy to think that, again, if Alabama beats Georgia, it's very possible that their playoff hopes will come down to Louisville.
Yeah, and that's something. Hey, we were talking earlier about Rich Rod and them doing a great job up here. I tell you what, Nick Saban and those guys have done a tremendous job. From that first game against Texas and then South Florida up until now, the offensive line, to me, had gotten 100% better from early on. Just through the year, through this year, they've just gotten better and better. I'll be watching that one.
I find that very interesting you said that about the offensive line, because Matt and I have been kind of obsessed with the offensive line this year at Alabama. From a coaching perspective, what do you have to do to get them to – start playing as a cohesive unit? Is in the cliche everyone uses is five fingers on the hand.
Yeah, that's probably the hardest position to get everybody playing the same. Because if all five, if one has a mistake, then the play is going to blow up. But I think they just kept going in practice and working on fundamentals and technique and ton of film work, that they've gotten a lot better to me. The left tackle, there's a freshman. I'm starting to say a rookie's a freshman, isn't he?
True.
He played like a freshman early, but now he's gotten better. The entire group, now if they could just not snap the ball, just make sure they snap it on the snap count. I'm going to say that's going to be a toss-up now. Georgia-Alabama is going to be a toss-up. you hear, I always hear about the team that like makes fewest mistakes. And I wouldn't be surprised if Alabama didn't come out and run the football and try to run it and throw a little play action deep. You know, Milroe loves to throw the ball deep, run it, get them safeties coming up and try to throw it over the top. So, going to be a fun weekend.
Absolutely. Well, say hello to Miss Jane, and you and I will talk again real soon. I know that.
I saw y'all were going to, what, the Innisfree Irish Pub Friday afternoon?
I believe that's the plan.
Oh, yeah. That sounds like a fun one.
You should come over and have some shepherd's pie with me.
I might have to. The Irish Pub reminded me of the great one on Green Springs back in the day.
Oh, gee. What was it? I can remember the guy that owned it, but I can't remember.
Right there by the softball field, wasn't it,
Matt? Yeah, on the other side of Norm's. We're not going down that road. All right, Tuffy, thank you.
Hey, great to talk to you guys.
Thanks, Tuffy. We'll see you soon.
See ya. All right.
Boy, if we had another couple hours, we could tell some stories. Hey, we'll be back in just a minute on Big Noon Sports.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A sunny, cool afternoon, Tuscaloosa's high 51. We go below freezing again tonight, clear with a low at 27. Tomorrow's sunny with a high at 56. Thursday, partly sunny during the day. Rain moves in Thursday night, the high at 60. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 54 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
From T-Town to the Plains. This is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
So the power playoff rankings will come out tonight. Now, the other polls, the coaches and the AP poll, both dropped Ohio State following their loss at Michigan to 6. Both those polls did. What's going to happen to them tonight in rankings that really count?
Okay, so before we get into the rankings themselves, I think it's important to have a little refresher here of some of the key points that the committee members are going to consider when deciding a team's ranking beyond their on-the-field record. Strength of schedule, conference championships once they're decided, head-to-head competition, not good for Alabama. Results versus common opponents and results versus ranked opponents. So I think right now clearly Georgia is going to be number one. And look, the Bulldogs, they struggled against Georgia Tech, but they also were missing three of their top five wide receivers, including Brock Bowers. And so I think all three of those guys are going to be playing against Alabama. I could be wrong on that, but I think it's accurate. I'm nearly positive that Bowers is going to play. And number two, it's got to be Michigan. Knocking off Ohio State for the third straight year. Heck, who knows? Maybe they don't need Jim Harbaugh on the sideline. and they're playing Iowa, which is just, they're a horrible team. They beat Nebraska.
They're a horrible offensive team.
Yeah, they got a great punter and a great defense, but Michigan's going to throttle them. And I think three, you'll have Washington, as you should. And four, you're going to have Florida State. I mean, so right now, you know, if those four teams win on Saturday, that is going to be the playoff field. And that also will be, in my estimation, that will be the seeding. One Georgia, two Michigan, three Washington, four Florida State. And I think the committee, they might have Ohio State at 5, you know, but, and I know Alabama fans could be up in arms about that. But don't worry, because Alabama will leapfrog Ohio State if Alabama beats Georgia again. Because what is really important to remember is that conference championships mean a lot. And so if Alabama is the SEC champ, they're definitely going to leapfrog Ohio State. I think Oregon will probably be 6. Texas will be 7. I think Alabama is still at 8.
I do too.
I mean, I just, it's pretty, seems pretty cut and dry how it's going to go. Oregon maybe will be above Ohio State, although I think Ohio State's loss to Michigan is a better loss than Oregon's loss to Washington earlier in the season. But again, all this will get resolved. And interestingly, you know, the highest ranked team with no shot at the college football playoffs is going to be a team that we've been talking about a lot today, about their coach, Missouri, and their running back. Missouri is at number 9.
Yep.
Missouri's going to be at number 9. And then I think you'll have, you know, not that it really matters, but Penn State will be in there, Ole Miss, Oklahoma, LSU, Louisville, probably around 13 or 14. That is intriguing because, again, it very well could come down to Saturday night. Can Louisville beat Florida State in Charlotte for the ACC championship? If that happens, then I think Alabama's got a great shot to make it in if Alabama beats. I don't know. Are we spending too much time on the possibilities rather than actually focusing on the game?
Well, I think it's fun to talk about, and maybe we should be more focused on Alabama, Georgia, which as the week gets older, I'm starting to have my concerns. And the largest concern is that even in winning games this year, Alabama's still mistake prone. And I know Georgia's made their fair share too, but in the balance of mistake football, who wins that? Who's made more mistakes this year, Alabama or Georgia?
Alabama.
Yeah. Yeah. And they made a bunch Saturday. But
who would you take right now as your starting quarterback? Milroe?
Or Beck? I shouldn't answer that on this radio station.
I would take Milroe. Yeah, hell yeah. Every day. Twice on Sunday. What? I don't even know the. What is the origin of that phrase? Every day and twice on Sunday.
Well,
I need to look it up. Or did I butcher the phrase?
I don't know. Could it have something to do? No, I think that's it.
How often you take a shower?
And twice on Sunday.
Yeah, I use one.
You take 2 showers on Sunday.
Yeah.
Is it because the phrase right there for Noah?
Yeah,
every day of the week?
No, we need you to chime in more, man. That's good stuff right there.
Yeah, I pretty much going into the show today wanted to find out how many times Noah Haynes showers on Sunday. I mean, that's top shelf stuff. That's above the fold.
It is.
How many times do you shower on Sunday?
One time is not a hair shower.
Oh.
So it's like a bath and then a shower?
No, just one time I wash my hair and one time I don't.
Oh.
Because you can't wash your hair too much or else it will be bad for you.
As Winston Churchill once said, why stand when you can sit? It's the beauty of a bath.
But you're also sitting in what you just washed off.
Sitting in your own stank.
There's the big deal. Of course, stank, you know, if you're using Lumi, it doesn't matter.
Ryan Fowler in the house.